The first one was about the about the memory benchmark, and discuss the CDF that I sent.
Mm-hmm.
What was another question? Oh, there was one about the timer for the cleaning thread.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, let's talk about that first, because it's independent of Ricardo.
Okay.
So what I was trying to convey, I'm not sure if you understood or not, but I was trying to say that the period that we choose for checking whether the enough number of pages are clean or not should depend on the number of pages which are required, clean pages that are required to meet the threshold times the page fault latency, at least, or at most, otherwise, or it should be shorter than that.
I think. Okay.
If you think about it, if you have back-to-back page faults, then you can run out of page. How quickly can you run out of clean pages?
This is an optimization in some sense, because the system will work even if we choose a bad timer.
Yeah,
right?
The system will still work, except that the page fault latencies will
go up, because probably we have to write.
Yeah, precisely. So the question that you need to ask is, how quickly can you run out of clean pages, and to make sure that you check for clean pages before that. So how quickly can you run out of clean pages in the worst case?
Mm-hmm.
That you run out of clean pages in the worst case if you have back-to-back page faults.
Exactly.
Right? So...
So I guess the worst case is, if we assume all the memory clean, the time to read... the time to read one page from flash to memory times the number of pages that we have in memory.
Well, assume that all the pages are dirty, or we cannot assume that all pages are dirty, then every page fault will need a writer.
Exactly.
What we need is, how many pages do you need to have clean at the very minimum? Which is lower one-third of 5%, or whatever it is that you're using, right? How much is that? How many pages is that?
I don't know.
Two-thirds of 5%. How much is that? That's the value you need to check, times the page fault latency. So, let's say you finished a cleaning operation. Alright?
Mm-hmm.
Just now. And the question is, how long should you wait until the next cleaning operation? Correct? What should be the period? Until you clean again. Correct? That's our question.
Okay.
So when I finish my first cleaning operation, how many clean pages do I have at the very minimum from the lower 5%? It's 2/3 of the pages. Right? Because I stopped cleaning when I reached 2/3 threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So in the worst case, what can happen is that the entire lower two-third of clean pages get dirty. Oh, they get dirty. That's all I care about. They get dirty. It's not just that they get dirty, but they're also page faults, and I need them. Right? So the rate at which pages are getting dirty is an independent concern. I think I messed up a little bit. I forgot the fact that pages get dirty independently of the page fault.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, how soon can we run out of clean pages? I guess we could run out of clean pages
very fast.
Very fast.
In the worst case.
In the worst case, because all you need to do is to dirty those lower two-thirds of pages.
Right.
But if they are, if we are making them dirty, then they are no longer maybe the.
No, but the thing about the dirty pages is that we need to have dirty all the pages, not only those two-thirds, but all the pages. Because remember that in the page fold, we're looking for any clean page. But for us, it's ideal that that clean page is in this top 5% or lower 5%.
Now, is that what you're doing? It is like you.
Yeah, that's what the paper says too. I mean, the thing is that we want to minimize the time of page fold. So what we're doing is to start searching from the. I'm talking about the score of the replacement algorithm, right? So, for instance, LRU. Let's say, so I start looking for the head of the LRU going back for a clean page. It doesn't matter if it's in the top or it's not. I just want a clean page because I want to write.
Nice. The problem with that is that, I mean, the way I wrote the part on replacement is okay. So you're choosing the replacement candidate based on the cost of replacement, right?
Yeah.
And which and the cost of replacement allows you to choose any page, any of the pages, not just the lower 5%.
Any of the pages.
Any of the pages. And that makes sense.
But you see that this cost is only used for what to flush.
What to evict?
What to evict. No, actually it's not evict, what to flush.
What to flush?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because the thing is that, well, what to flush and the order on which
you replace.
We
evict.
Search for a page to evict.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, okay. But the cost could be lower for a dirty page than a clean page, in which case you'll pick a dirty page, right? And in that case, you need to perform a write operation. If you look at the cost, then the cost is a factor, it takes into account the dirtiness of the page and the rank of the page. So you could replace the dirty page in favor of a clean page. Because it's a low rank page. And that's what we want. And that's why we are combining the rank and the dirty information within one equation. Right?
So what happened with LRU, for instance?
With LRU, LRU is a different. There is no differentiation between clean and dirty. So you pick the page that is the least recently used. Maybe clean, it may be dirty. If it's dirty, then you need to.
Yeah. No, the thing is that before we said something different, actually what we said in the beginning was that we will choose any page or the highest ranked page that is screen.
I don't think we say anything of that.
Yeah. Do you have a copy of the paper?
I think so.
So probably.
We have talked, we could have talked about this in passing, but I don't think we finalized that.
Yeah, that's why it's on the song itself. Yeah.
Because the whole point of creating that equation is that we have a total ordering of all the pages, clean and dirty. Right? And if a dirty page is lower rank than a clean page, then it gets thrown out. It gets evicted.
Anyway.
So right now the way you have it is you're checking in that order, but you're choosing the clean page, is it?
Yeah, because I mean I'm only evicting if there is no clean page.
I see.
Wouldn't that well?
Hmm?
Not that.
The problem with that is that I mean it's good at
the
bad moment.
But you don't have
research. Probably you need that page as you just flipped.
Yeah.
So probably you need to read that.
Wow.
And the cost function already takes into account whether the page is dirty or clean, right?
Yeah.
And combines it with the importance of the page to be in memory, which is the rank of the page.
So in the case then of the LRU, I just evict the first page, it doesn't matter if it's clean or not.
Yeah. Exactly. The reason for why we have a cleaning thread in the background is to ensure that there are sufficient number of low ranked pages that are clean.
Yeah.
So we don't have to evict a dirty page.
Yeah, I guess what we want is that we want to keep the pages we're going to evict next clean so we don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we could make an improvement to the victim selection mechanism, which is as long I don't care to pick the lowest ranked page, but one of the low ranked page which is clean, right? So we could do that. That is an improvement over what we have, right? Because it could be possible that the lowest ranked page just got dirty, and maybe there is not a whole lot of difference between the lowest ranked page and the rank and the next one, and maybe the next one is clean. So we could do some optimizations, but I don't think it's required.
Yeah. Okay.
The one thing which you need to do though is that before you choose the page, you sort of recompute the rank, right? When do you recompute the rank?
No, I compute the rank each time I have to
evict.
Evict.
You recompute all ranks.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of costly because I was thinking of some smart way of doing that. Because the thing is that each time I computer rank, I have to sort.
That's right,
yeah. Right? And I have to do that for as many pages as we have in the whole virtual memory. Right?
You can use the property that the page ranks can decrease, right?
Yeah, but they can also increase. Right?
They can also increase, but they can decrease. So there is. I was wondering if you can use a property that page ranks do not decrease. I don't think that's true.
No, they can decrease. They can decrease because
decay.
Decay. Not the decay, but the LRU, right? Because I'm using, you know, that we have a rank part for the cost.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using LRU. So that value can go down.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But there are some details which we probably have to discuss.
No, I mean, in the emulator, there are plenty of details.
And the performance is probably going to be sensitive to some of these parameters.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for instance, another thing that we need to discuss eventually is, you know, that we have in the clock, we have for the segment selection, we have one that skips some segments based on the cost benefits, right? But we need to give a threshold. So I don't know what value we can use for that. Because the thing is that, you know, that cost benefit is not between 0 and 1, for instance. It can go up.
I mean, we could use something like a threshold that is based on the average threshold, average cost benefit. Right? So if it's lower than the average cost benefit, you skip it, which, or the other way around, whichever, I don't know, that, something to that effect. But then the threshold will change. Each time the cost benefit of one of the pages changes, it's dynamic threshold.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I will have to compute all the scores each time. I want to check them.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could also use some sort of this property that the average does not change drastically. So you compute it only once in a while. Right. So you could do something along those. But yeah, so when you pick a threshold, it probably needs to be relative to the cost benefits of various pages rather than a fixed number. Okay. So I guess did we resolve the question of the periodic check?
I think so.
No, the periodic check we didn't even resolve.
No.
How quickly we do the...
Should be based on... Well, probably it's a bad idea to work on terms of the max. Because probably then we will... I mean, if we use the max, then we'd probably... we'd probably clean to frequency. Right. I'm trying to think if we should use some kind of dynamic timer based on something.
Based on some past. So if you, let's say you check the condition is not satisfied, maybe next time you increase the time.
Exactly. Something like
that. Sort of double or something like additive increase and maybe multiplicative decrease or something like that.
Exactly.
Like TCP flow control.
Okay.
Right. So let's say that your current time, the duration that you use, does not change the state of the system.
Okay.
Then you increment it by a fixed value next time, the delay.
Okay.
And so you have a fixed delay of increment. So do you know about TCP flow control?
I knew time back, but I don't remember.
Okay. So it's the idea of changing the window size in TCP, right?
Okay.
How many packets
Or it's not about the timer, it's about the window.
It's about the window size.
Okay.
So how many packets do you put in this window?
Okay.
Which are the number of packets that are sent out but not yet acknowledged.
Okay.
Right. So the idea is that if there is a lot of bandwidth in the network, you want to send a lot of packets asynchronously.
Okay.
Right. And
so you increase
the window. But then if you see congestion, which means that you see packet loss.
Okay.
Then you want to decrease your window size quickly.
Okay.
Because when there is congestion, there is a multiplicative effect.
Okay.
But when you want to increase the window size, you don't make drastic increase, you make additive increase.
Okay.
So you add 10, add 20, but then when you hit 100, you reduce to 50 immediately, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, so we could use sort of similar idea here.
So how can we apply that?
So let's say that my increase is... always 1 second.
Okay.
So let's say I start with a 1 second interval.
I think I understand. Yeah, that's a good idea. So the thing is that we will start increasing the timer.
Yeah.
And at some point, we'll see that we have a lot of writes.
No, at some point, we'll see that actually state changed. Okay, we see that the state changed. Right?
What state change?
So the thing is, we are waiting for a change in state so that we can start cleaning.
Okay.
Right, which is the condition that lower one third of the pages are not clean.
Okay.
Right, that's the condition we are checking.
Right.
So we check once, then we see that that condition is not changed. Then we increase the delay to check later. So we increase the timeout. Right?
Okay.
We check again, condition not change, we increase the timeout again. Condition not change, we increase the timeout again. At some point when we increase the timeout, we see condition has changed. Okay, then we maintain that timeout.
Okay.
We maintain that timeout and we see how many pages are getting clean, how many pages are becoming dirty. If that the number of pages becoming dirty is stable, then we maintain that time. And if we see, okay, that once again condition not changed for a while, then we increase it again. But then if we see that the number of clean pages are dropping drastically, then we reduce by half, like the size of
okay.
the duration.
Okay.
So we could do something along those lines.
Yeah, the problem I see with this is that, you know, that in the same thread, I'm doing both things, which is I'm flushing top pages, or well, the low pages, and I'm also cleaning in case of lock.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't know if that affects somehow. I mean, if we can use the same...
I guess, wouldn't it be the same? Because if you don't flush data out, you don't use the log. So these timeouts, I guess, are correlated, right?
Actually, now I would use the log, right? Because if I have to write because of page fault from the page fault that selected 30 page, then I have to flush.
But you sort of get the general idea.
Yeah,
we could do an adaptive page like this. Or we could just use a fixed reasonable timeout, whatever you think is. If a fixed timeout is working fine, then...
Yeah, actually, I don't know because I don't have numbers.
Mm. So maybe once you start doing some experiments...
Apparently, it's doing okay, but it could be a lot better.
Okay.
I mean, at least it's working right now. So at this point, I found a new bug. And the thing is that actually it's not a bug. I sort of knew this would happen. So the thing is that so there are a couple of things involved, right? So the first thing is that when I need to do cleaning in the flash, in the logging with cleaning, I need clean pages in memory. You see that I need to load I mean, as a process of and the cleaning and compaction, you need to load some pages to memory and then write them back.
So I think we discussed this at some point, and we said that let's reserve some clean pages for just the log, the cleaning mechanism.
Okay.
Some reserve some memory pages just for cleaning mechanism or padding mechanism, whichever it is. I think we discussed this. Maybe we discussed something similar, but this is one approach. Just to reserve pages to make things simple. Because we're not going to reserve a whole lot of pages. It's probably going to be really small, right?
Right.
But I think that's okay.
Yeah, I guess the question is how would you use that? Because the thing is that, okay, so let's say that, remember that there are some pages where there are some pages, when I'm doing cleaning, there are some pages that I don't have to, that's right? Doesn't make any sense. So reserve some space. You don't use that space.
Don't use that for anything else.
But for cleaning. So that means that after I finish cleaning a segment, I free those pages.
Yeah.
Set them free.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's the easiest way to deal with it. Otherwise, it might get too messy. And
actually, I think the way I'm doing it right now is okay.
Okay.
I guess the problem that I had is that I was trying to clean too many segments at the same time. So, for some reason, at some point, I decided it was a good idea to go ahead and read all the pages of all the segments I'm going to clean in these right now. Right, so the bug triggered because I was trying to clean 100 segments at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to read the whole, all the pages in all those segments into memory.
Yeah, you probably want to clean maybe one segment or two segments at a time. In the case of padding, I guess you need to do two segments because you have.
Actually, in the case of padding, it doesn't matter. The thing is that when I do padding. The only thing I want to do is to free one segment, right? So what I do is to free as many segments. Let me see. What I want to do is to compact many pages in one segment.
Mm-hmm.
So in the worst case, it would be only two, right? I think. Yeah. Correct. So it would be two. So what I'm doing is to compact as many pages as the size of a segment,
mm-hmm.
and that will give me at least one segment.
Okay.
Exactly. Which is exactly what I want.
Okay.
If it gives me more than one segment, it's even better, right? So I have to repeat that. But that's not a problem because all the memory I need is only one segment.
Okay.
It's actually one segment.
So your problem is with the logging.
The problem is only with the logging.
Logging with cleaning. Yeah. So there, I guess you can limit the number of segments you clean and pad at any given time.
Okay.
To, let's say, four or something.
Okay.
So you only need to reserve so much memory for four segments.
What I did to solve the problem of memory, of if I have enough memory to clean, to log thing or not, is to make the flush operation of the memory before the cleaning,
mm-hmm.
which will give me some free pages.
Okay.
Yeah. The problem is that it's tricky because if I do that, probably run out of segments.
Mm-hmm.
See? So I have to clean first in that case. But
I think it's better to reserve some memory for doing that so you don't have this dependency between flush operations and cleaning operations. Okay, so let's go back to that original question on the memory latency.
Okay.
Right. So for memory latency, the graph that you had, which was 0.1 microseconds for reads.
No, actually 0.5.
0.5 microseconds for reads?
No, No, I don't remember. The thing is that writes are kind of doubled in the other one.
So you think for reads was 0.04, and for writes was 0.2.
No, I remember I checked that it was a little bit more than double because I'm sure it's because for writing, the thing that's going on is that you load and then write.
Mm-hmm.
But we can check, but writing full lines.
Hmm. Okay. Let me pull up that graph. I will know for sure what is going on.
And if not, we can. I can borrow your code and try it on.
Like here, right?
Yeah.
So the thing is that there is also like this tail here. Right?
Oh.
And then there's another guy over here.
Yeah.
So this is actually small fraction. The largest fraction is over here, which is this guy.
Okay.
Which is probably 0.0.0. I don't know.
Yeah, I never know how to read this. If it has four things, it's like this is divided in four.
Four parts.
Yeah.
So this is 0.125. This is probably 0.4 or something like that.
Yeah, what I usually do is to try to read the whole scale. So
why did you put your scale all the way up to 1,000?
No, because the thing is that there are some, point that it's going all up to 5.78. I don't know if it's an outlier or not, but it's only one axis that is
5.78 microseconds.
This is basically per read. I mean, per read or write. I mean, you measure time before and after.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know if I did it correctly, but I was very careful on what to put in registers and what to put in memory.
Mm. I mean, the difference is that on reads you have prefetching, and on writes you have, if you don't write full lines, you have to read and then write.
Yeah, but the thing is the prefetching doesn't matter
because it's
random. Random.
Yeah, but if all the working set is the size of the cache, it's not the size of the cache.
The working set is the size of the cache. I'm allocating 4 gigabytes of above the possible 4 gigabytes.
4 gigabytes?
Yeah.
Ah, so it's...
Yeah.
You're allocating a 4 gig array?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
My log?
Yeah,
but I did it in
Trig,
so I'm guessing that it's working because of that.
Ah, yeah.
You did it in what?
Trig.
64.
The new machine.
Uh-huh, okay.
Which, address 48B. So I guess
that it should be at least, for write, it should be at least double. That's for sure. Because you need to load and write.
You need to load and write?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
the write is cache, isn't it?
Exactly. The write is more than memory.
But one write causes one eviction.
Yes.
For reads, again, you cause eviction. No, not really, because they're all clean.
They're all clean, so you can just read. And
you can just read and
throw out some...
But things. For writes, you have to read, which causes an eviction, so you have to write that too. So there is
a write, a load, and a write to the cache.
Yep. Do you have this graph in the SPM?
Yes.
Oh.
And another thing is that also depends on what word of the line you're writing, you're reading, you're writing.
Yeah, I'm doing four bytes.
Hello.
For each.
Hello.
So things that try to make your the thing is that you have a line, right? And if you load, let's say this thing,
okay,
it doesn't actually have to load the whole line.
Okay.
it is possible to know, but sometimes it tries to get only the word that you're reading and a lot of stuff like that.
Okay.
But for write, it loads the whole line. I don't know why.
Okay.
So there are some differences like this. So you have to check on that thing.
I guess the most first thing to do would be to use line. I mean
your data unit should be line. Aligned physically to line.
Exactly.
Yes.
That would be the more first thing
yes.
to do.
Yes.
Yeah, but fair thing to do?
Yeah.
Or because it's random, it's not really representative of the cost, right?
No, because of what Ricardo is saying. The problem is that when you do a read, the CPU doesn't need to get the whole line.
Some architects, yes.
So what about this one?
On Intel, it goes, I mean, if you need the first word of a line, you only get the first word.
Okay.
But if you put it like this, you will get until here.
Okay.
But on some architectures, like the Power 6, if you need this, you only get this.
And that's all?
That's all.
And how is that cached?
I don't know how they do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, your application will start until you get this. So it gives you this, and then on the background, still loading stuff.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So how do you know all this stuff?
Reading. He likes to read this stuff.
That's the kind of stuff I like in life.
Okay.
But I mean, there are billions of tricky stuff going on, I'm sure.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. More than this.
So, I think it's what we have is perfectly okay to sample read and write latencies.
Yeah, at least we have an explanation for why write is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think we're okay. The only assumption is that these are random reads and random writes.
Yeah, so I guess the other thing is, I implement the. What we discussed about the time last time,
mm-hmm.
in the last meeting. So I guess now that I have these numbers, what I should do in simulation, because one thing we mentioned is that we also are going to include these times, right?
Another thing, how are you measuring time before and after? Read time, time count, right?
Yeah.
But you're doing it alone.
Alone.
I mean, just during the instruction read time stamp count.
Yeah.
Thing is that I had that problem. Sometimes, let's say you get the time. You do your stuff, you get the time. Because it's out of order execution. Your timing may be switching up. So maybe the huge time you have is because it's moving your get time. Whatever.
Okay.
So to be sure that you actually read the time at that moment, you need to
do a CPU ID.
Some instructions like CPU ID, read time, CPU ID.
I'm doing a CPU ID, I think.
Yeah.
I have to check.
Yes.
I got this from somewhere. I didn't do this part, so.
Okay.
But I know there is a CPU ID.
Yeah, that's the truth.
So I think this is reliable enough. It seems like most of the latencies in this range, which is, I don't know, 0.4 microseconds, 0.3 or
0.... I don't remember.
That's most of it, right? And then for reads, it is more like 0.05. So it's an order of magnitude difference. It's not twice, but huge difference.
So the thing is that you see that what we're doing is we are getting the best case for read and the worst case for write.
That's also true.
Best case for read.
Yes, if it's using that thing.
Because in case that you need to read something and evict something, then it will be different.
Yeah, and not the best case for write because you are loading and writing.
If we mix both
mm-hmm.
reads and writes,
and then get read and write latency separately,
yeah, that could be one way to do it.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
aspect. And also do it in line.
Yes.
Rather than.
No, but that's not the the way programs use memory. They don't use it in lines.
That's true.
Well, smart programmers could.
Smart programmers could, but we are talking about the average case, right?
Yeah.
Which is not smart.
there is no smart, right?
Compilers could do some tricks, right?
Compilers could do some tricks, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, they could, I guess, but I think it's okay to not be smart here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So mixed reads and writes. So I guess that will require some small change in your code.
Yeah.
And rerun the experiment.
So we like that, and let's start with a really minimalistic code. And end up with
well, in this case, hopefully, it still stays small, right?
Oh, really?
Not so much different.
Very curious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the emulator is gigantic by the
I mean, it's complicated. I guess the code is still small, but it's complicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Yeah, so I think we can address this, and maybe once we do this version, then the reads and writes will go closer.
Yeah.
Get closer. Okay.
Yeah. I guess the other thing I have missing is a graph of the motivation, the required bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do that. So I guess the only question I had was to, there are some values we said with 100%, with 180%. This 100% and 80% and so on is 80% of the working set size. Is that right?
80% of all the memory, of all the used memory.
Exactly.
All the used memory, yes. Okay. You know, the working set may be smaller than all the used memory. Right.
Yeah. What I meant is, all the used memory.
Mm-hmm. You remember that on the afternoon that we were reading the specs and stuff, there are some parts that say something about some feature that is used for measuring instruction latency and stuff like that. Remember?
No. But, no, I don't remember. Probably I didn't read that.
Maybe, I think there's something like that.
Probably we can reach
out. Measure the instruction latency?
Yeah.
For instance,
I mean,
the load.
How long is instruction in the pipeline until it's retired?
Yeah.
That's something,
So I think it's used that to measure the latency.
Yep. But I guess this is not the most important.
It's not the most important, no. And I think with the change that we are making, it's going to be accurate enough.
Yeah.
In our, we are comparing these latencies with latencies of hundreds or at least tens of microseconds. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the other thing, you know, that right now, for some reason, again, the SSD is giving latencies of 200 microseconds for 4K.
Mm.
Yeah.
So did you try writing to the entire SSD?
No,
I haven't
tried that.
You can try that, see what you get. In some sense, we are always writing sequentially to the entire SSD, right? For the logging.
No, that's another thing I want to say. That actually we're writing sequentially, but always starting from zero, right? Because that's where I initialize the thing. But even in the paper, I think that's a bad idea. Probably we just said something like every time we reboot or something like that, we start from a random segment. Because so
a random segment, but segment where we stop writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that information can be kept persistent.
square.
On this, on a file.
On that.
Okay. Actually, we can
do that for your stuff also, right?
Yeah.
But the reason you're using small SSD is because you're reducing the size of the memory.
No, right now I'm using a small SSD because I want to stress the cleaning.
I see.
Because
okay.
It's where all the bugs are right now.
Okay.
Yeah, because it would be perfect not to debug that, but the problem is that I think the experiments will take a long time.
Mm.
So if I find a bug just before the experiment finishes.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think you're doing the right thing. So you're more systematic than many other people, I think.
Bro.
Too much.
Yeah.
And that's good. I think in the long run, it will have its reward. Because remember that this is only our first submission. On an average, we submit 3 or 4 times. Which makes sense. Because if you look at the acceptance rates of these conferences, it's around 20%. So which means 1 out of 5 submissions should get in.
Right.
Assuming that the quality of all submissions that get in are approximately the same.
Right.
So I was just talking to Jason about this over coffee just before we had our meeting. And I think it's painful when papers get rejected. But then what is even more painful is that if you did some nice piece of work and no one reads it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, for instance, some papers that you thought you had a good idea, but then you chose to submit it just to get the paper accepted somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is that your paper gets accepted and you're done with that, but then you spent maybe 6 months doing that work, right? And then no one reads your paper because it's submitted in a venue which is not that visible, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think what we are doing with our submissions is the right thing, which is to, although it's a painful process with multiple rejections, I think in the end, at least you can say that you published a paper where people actually read papers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so we have these 2 publications, right?
Yeah.
Good.
So
very
I
good.
Think that's good.
Yeah.
I was hoping George's paper was
I think that was very much at the borderline.
Yeah.
I think it was very much at the borderline. So he had two, one three, and one four. I think it's
just a week
accept and 2 week reject.
So what about the DDoP paper?
4433.
4433. Same as...
No, that was...
That's the same as... Yeah.
Okay.
DDoP was... I think it had a 5 as well.
It had more revisions.
It had five reviews.
Yeah.
There was one, two, maybe two twos. Then 1 3, 1 4, and 1 5, something like that.
1 5?
Yeah.
Well,
one guy was happy.
Thanks to that guy.
Yeah.
Even if that had been a 4, I think we still made it. Would have still made it. Because I think the average acceptance score would probably be about 3, I think. A little above 3.
So do you know the acceptance rate?
I don't know. Did any of you get information about it?
No. But I wanted to check how much paper the Wisconsin guys.
So we have a competition.
Yeah,
they'll probably have multiple papers.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But it's good. I mean, I think our lab is getting stronger.
And I'm
hoping that we'll continue this trend over the next 2 or 3 years at least.
With this new guy would be easier.
What?
With the new guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll have more people to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the new student may not be able to help all that much in the first year.
In the first couple of years.
Yeah. I think what we should do is try and get him involved in some papers as secondary contributor, so that he gets used to the process.
Yeah.
And we can also use his skills for some of the work.
Yeah. New experience.
fix the QMO.
yeah,
that would be nice. Yeah.
So I read the Google thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
I wish they had more details.
Yeah.
It was a very short summary. But it's certainly interesting to see that Google is one of the biggest consumers of Linux, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they run Linux throughout, I don't know, I think the million machines. And I won't be surprised if it's more than a million.
Yeah.
But
they seem that they were struggling with the kernel, right? I mean, keeping up with the current version of the kernel and doing the stuff they have to do and painful thing.
But they have 36,
I think, developers.
Kernel developers who are full time doing just this, right?
Yeah.
And
that's true.
It means that you guys could go and work for Google.
That would be a nice job.
Only hack for the kernel?
Yeah. It'd
be interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm sure with the kind of experience that you are getting, you can make a case for one of those jobs if you're really interested in such.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is that I don't know how, because in some sense it would be nice at the beginning, but if you're restricted in your...
Some modules for all your life.
And your creativity, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have...
Yeah.
At least if I don't have the opportunity to think.
And you can write code for the kernel whenever,
Yeah.
You can work on something else.
The other thing I checked, I forgot to tell you, probably a week ago, there is this code from the block layer developer, Jens
Axel,
that is called Fcache.
Okay.
It was done in 2006. Okay. He says that was his weekend project.
I don't know if that means that he did it in a weekend, but maybe he worked on this project over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Maybe like 12 or...
Probably
weekend.
6 months all week. Well, anyway, so...
I hope so. If it is less, then we are wasting our time.
So, he said that this Fcache is very similar to Borg.
Similar to what?
Borg.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it's 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Borg has, I guess has mm-hmm. better ideas and more complete and so on, but the basic idea is there.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that this guy, what he does is he starts some kind of daemon or some kind of tracer
mm-hmm.
For some application. Let's say that you want to optimize the booting
mm-hmm.
process. So it starts the tracing, the trace starts, and while the thing is that it does is that when there is a read to a block, it reads a block and writes it to some partition, but online, all this online, right? So it writes it to a partition, but it writes it sequentially.
Oh, that's cool.
Right? And then you stop. I mean, you stop the tracing part, and then you just use this partition, for instance, to boot. So that's the idea called Fcache.
Yeah, but Windows and Mac also use this, right? Which is that you optimize for specific applications.
For a specific access.
For a specific
access.
Yeah, specific application, startup or boot or whatever it is.
Right.
I think, for instance, Windows has this ready, or they have something, I don't think it's ready boot. It's
something else.
This is something else which does say pretty much the same thing as Fcache.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Borg is more complex than that.
No, Borg is more complex. Has some interesting things. But you know, what's interesting. Well, I guess the first drawback of the F-cache is that it's all mixed up, right? So if you are, I don't know, if you are starting Firefox and Thunderbird and, you know, and all at the same time, all the operations will be mixed. I mean, that would be the secret.
Yeah, but I guess you could start some applications in the same time.
Yeah, anyway, so, that was interesting.
Yeah, so I guess we should probably spend a good amount of time to make these papers really nice. So that for instance, the IODDU paper, we need to carefully compare with Satori.
Oh, yeah.
And I did read the Satori paper today morning again, and it seems like we are quite different than them.
Really?
Yeah, because they don't really eliminate IO operations. Because they don't have information about which parts of disk are duplicated in the memory.
Okay.
So they store the content hash in memory after they read it, and then the next time they read something, they compare it with the content hash. And if yes, then they just pass a pointer to the previous version.
Okay.
But they don't change the IO pattern.
Yeah.
So although you could say, well, you could add this additional information that we have, but then they don't really have our solution.
Yeah. But the technique submitting was already on the year of Satori, right?
By the time of submission, I think, it was already published, but we were not aware.
Okay,
so I need to meet
you.
So, Luis, I'll send you the abstract. I'm still working on it.
Okay.
And then you go ahead and register the paper.
Okay.
So, you put the author list as yourself, Ricardo, me, and then Akshay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So, you got the list, right?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right.